right. Welcome to Literally the Podcast, our very first one.
The very first one. So bear with us. We don't know how this is going to go.
I think it's going to be exactly who we are, which is a fun little mess.
I was thinking that messy.
I am Lindsay.
My name is Magda.
And we will be your humble hosts for today to chat all things books, pop culture, and just what pops into our brains.
Yeah, should be fun.
So we thought we'd do a little introduction about who we are and the books that made us, because I think that's a good way to sort of
get to know us.
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit.
What about you? You start us out.
Yeah, okay. So I was never a big reader. I don't think I was. But then my sophomore year of high school, I took a field trip to Corpus Christi as part of a Future Business Leaders of America club. Very nerdy. It was really fun. But then we watched a movie, Pride and Prejudice, with Keira Knightley, and we were obsessed.
The best movie.
I had never read Pride and Prejudice, and I just got obsessed with it. The hand situation. I'm like, what is this book? So I got into reading Pride and Prejudice, and I just fell in love with Jane Austen.
The hand situation, you mean when he does...
Yes. When he does this. Yeah. Ooh. Yes, Mr. Darcy.
Forever.
So that just kind of opened up my eyes a little bit to like some of the romance novels, and ever since I've just been obsessed.
So you're a romance girly.
I am. Yeah. I love it. That's always my comfort zone. Love a good romance
novel. It's funny how those books that you first read, like really they track through the rest of your life.
Exactly.
Okay, so Pride and Prejudice.
My favorite. I do like a lot of like romantasy, fantasy style type of things. I think like all stereotypical millennials, we got into Twilight and Hunger Games, Harry Potter, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But Pride and Prejudice was the gateway drug.
I have three.
Okay.
You know, I'm just an overachiever. I can't.
Just pick one.
I can't pick one. No, because they're all like for different parts of my life, I would say. Like I remember reading the first book that I was really in love with was A Wrinkle in Time. I read
that as a kid. Yeah.
And I thought it was so cool because the main character is in a situation where she has to save her dad, but no one comes to save her. Like her friends are there and she has support from people in the book. But like one of the morals of the story is like, no one is going to do this for you. You kind of have to figure it out for yourself.
Love that.
And I love that as a kid because you're like, oh, the world is scary and you don't always have adults around, especially like, yeah, we're millennials, so, like, it was a lot less structured back then.
It was a Wild Wild West back in the day.
Yes,
back
exactly. In my day. You were walking to and from places by yourself. You didn't have a cell phone. Like, it was – and so I love that.
Nice. Did you watch the movie?
I did.
The book definitely better than the movie?
It's tough because when something is, like, super formative for you, it sort of sets it up for failure. You're never going to be okay with how it comes out. So it was disappointing to me. But I do love Ava DuVernay, and I think that – It was like a beautiful take on it. It just was hard to meet my expectations. But I think like that book is sort of sci-fi a little bit, you know? I love a multiverse.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do like the whole experience of jumping into different lives or other universes. I think it's fun.
It's part
of the fantasy stuff.
Yeah, I think, and I feel like it's become more popular. But like my other book is... the His Dark Materials series by Philip Pullman, which they just made an HBO show about, also a multiverse, also about two kids who kind of have to save the world on their own, where I really liked worlds where, like, parents were kind of not around or, like, not that helpful, and the kids just sort of save the day. Like, as a kid, you're just like, yes, it's so empowering. I loved it. And that's another one where the show and the movies were like, not as good. Everyone says this. It's not like a...
I know. I feel like we're always like those annoying people. It's like, oh,
it's not as good as the book. But that's true because you have so much time. Like, especially in like sci-fi or fantasy, like you need that time.
You need to develop that story.
You can't just like go into it.
So what was the third book? You mentioned that there was a third one.
Yeah, the third book was a book that I actually got in college that was recommended to me by a friend. And it was Octavia Butler's... Parable series. Have you ever heard of her?
Never heard of her.
Okay, so it was very, it was sort of like predicting what was to come because it's about a like post-apocalyptic world after there's basically like a disease, that contagion that spreads.
Wow.
And
when was this written?
I think it's the mid-90s, I want to say. I'm thinking 1999 is when the first book came out.
But it's set in the 2020s.
Yes. So it's like the near future, but obviously like...
There's still a chance.
Well, you're right. We haven't gotten to 20... We haven't gotten to the real 2020. It's 20 years in advance. Mm-hmm. But like it's basically about the lead character being like a hyper-empathic person. So they are like spared from whatever the contagion is in the community she lives in. But okay. She's like seeing the destruction around her and like deciding if she wants to stay in her bubble basically. But I loved it because, one, I had never really been introduced to, like, super feminine sci-fi at that point, right? Like, sci-fi at the time was, like, Lord of the Rings to me or, like, you know, Lord of the Rings was fantasy. But you know what I mean.
The
like,
Hobbit. Just, yeah.
And yeah, like, stuff, not yeah. – and she was this, like, lesbian black female author that made this, like, very cool series. And she has another book called Kindred that's about
– I have heard of that one. Yeah. Yes, okay.
Loved her.
Gonna add it to my very long list of TBR already on Goodreads.
There's a theme though, right? Okay. I feel like we all have a theme, right?
We all kind of have like our comfort zone of what exactly. We like and what we gravitate towards.
And I guess my comfort zone is like highly traumatic situations.
For me, it's the happily ever afters. For Lindsay, it's a trauma.
I do think it's like you, it does sort of help you find your people, right? You find who has your same comfort zone and like who can kind of push you out of your comfort zone and then that's it. Those are your book friends forever.
Yeah. And I think that's the kind of a cool thing about book clubs. I think you kind of go through these different, like people picking different books kind of opens up your world into other things that maybe potentially you didn't get to explore before. I think it was because of our little book club that I kind of started getting into a little bit more fantasy because they were kind of pushing us to read a lot of the SJM cinematic universe.
Yeah, so Magda and I are the same. We are in a book club together. It's sort of, I mean, we've known each other a lot longer, but I do think like the book club is just another way for us to like...
Social.
Yeah, activities. To socialize like more regularly. And we started reading, Sarah J. Maas's ACOTAR series, like every other person.
Like that's the older millennial. No, I guess it's kind of like, it's very popular, right? It's not just with millennials.
No, I mean, my niece is 24 and she's reading it.
Yeah, so Gen Zers too are into it. It's a pretty universal,
sort of a unifying book. And I think we've been missing that a little bit. Something that like really rallies a large
everybody.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I think last year was just such a good year for a lot of like that type of community building. You know, we had like the Barbie movie, you know, we all went together and started dressing up and it was like a little community.
That's so true. I didn't even really connect that.
And
but
then
you're totally
we had
right.
Fourth Wing and Iron Flame coming out. Mm-hmm. And that was like another experience that we'll talk about here in a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's just kind of nice that we're kind of getting to hang out a little bit more and exploring all of these themes and being together and happy, I guess.
It's like a weird side benefit of a COVID overreaction, right? We're like overcorrecting to spend so much time together after being apart.
You know, you're right. You know, that's probably what it is. That's a really good point. I didn't think about that.
And I'm not a joiner. I'm a person who likes to sit quietly. Mm-hmm. And I'm married to someone who would never leave the house if they didn't have to. So so it's kind of nice to have those moments where you like have an excuse to make an event of something.
Yeah, it is kind of nice.
And you mentioned the Iron and Flame release.
Yes. Do you want to maybe talk a little bit about our experience? You want to talk about it? All right. So I think last year, when was that? Like during, I forget when did Iron Flame release? Was it in
a few
October,
months ago?
November? Mm. No, December. December. December,
yeah,
right?
You're right.
So we actually like, you know, we read Fourth Wing like everybody and their moms did. It was amazing. We really loved the story. We loved all of the dragons and like the schools. Like a nice little mixture if you haven't read it. Which, if you haven't read it, you should go read it immediately.
You've not been on the internet in a fair amount of time. You're not spending time in book talk.
Yeah, you need to go and get in social media and look at all the memes. It's amazing. But it's like a perfect combination of like Harry Potter, Hunger Games, a little bit of Game of Thrones in there. It's like the best of all worlds, I guess. I don't know how to say that. But anyways.
Yeah.
But it was great. So we went, you know, the second book got released. It was like highly anticipated. And we found out that there were actually going to be midnight release parties, which was kind of exciting. I don't know about you, but I haven't had one of those midnight release parties since Harry Potter book 7.
Yes.
In 2007 when I was in college. I'm dating myself here. And it was kind of an amazing experience. What were your thoughts about that?
It's funny because for me, like a midnight release party is sort of hell in that I don't ever want to leave my house past 8 p.m.
True.
But I came to Harry Potter late in my life. Even though the books came out and Harry was like exactly my same age, I was a defiant little brat and I refused to do any of those midnight release parties. So I was excited in that, like, adult me really wanted to find that kind of fun. You can't really, it's hard to find spaces as an adult where it's just like, I mean, even the events there, right? It was silly. It was meant to be silly. It was meant to be fun. There wasn't like, it was meant to be, it was almost childlike.
It was like, we were doing like, what is it called? Like, we were doing origami, trying to build dragons.
Right.
We were coloring stuff. Like, it was like we were 10 again, but it was such a fun experience to tap into that. And we had, like, scavenger hunts all around the Barnes & Noble. And this is, like, a two-story Barnes & Noble, so you can just imagine a whole bunch of grown adult women just running around the store trying to find clues.
Yes.
It was just such a fun experience.
It was definitely interesting to see the people that came too, because you're right, you mentioned it being mostly women, but it was like, I mean, there were men there too. It was definitely a more open and inviting environment. It was, you know, not to make generalizations.
That's
but
true.
I did notice like the kind of people that are involved in like the book community heavily, it's sort of like a gentler version of people who are like super into World of Warcraft. No judgments if you're into World of Warcraft, but
sorry, husband.
Now we're like offending people left and right. With our
the poor husbands are just getting thrown in there.
Sorry. We're just throwing you right under our bus. But it like, I remember at one point we're in the cafe, like ordering coffee because again I can't stay awake past 8:30 without assistance.
Same.
And one of the women in front of me got a coupon for a half off coffee and she like passed it back down the row, and it was like a thing that was happening that month, and they just kept passing it back and passing it back, and it's just like, what a, in any other environment you would throw that receipt away and move on about your day, and here it was just like, oh no, we're all here together, we're gonna save ourselves $1.50 on this drink.
I love that. Such a, I don't know, it's just like, it just kind of speaks of like how nice and good like the book community is. That's, in general.
Yes.
It's just so nice to have found all of you guys.
Well, and it's hard. I think it's sometimes hard to make friends without, you know, you make friends at work or you make friends in school, but it's hard to just make friends out in the wild without something to talk about. And like books are such an easy, especially with like an ACOTAR or a fantasy series or a Fourth Wing series. People are rabid, and we love that. We like
it's
people
great.
That are excited. So you already have a baseline to talk to someone about. Mm-hmm.
And like that's kind of how we met one of our newfound friends.
Yes.
Lauren, we can edit this name out if she doesn't want to be named in the podcast. We can ask her. But now she's pretty much joined our book club, and we just found her that she went to the midnight release party by herself, and she saw us, and like we just like, come hang out with us.
Yes.
Let's be friends.
We were standing now, in line next to each other to just sign in, and that was that.
And that's how we find new friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which, you know, you're right. It is kind of hard, like, once you're in like in your mid 30s, like how do you find new friendships outside
of work? It's like dating.
It's
uncomfortable.
It's weird.
And then I feel weird too, because I feel like I haven't dated in a long time, and I never dated like super well. It was always people that I knew. So like sidling up to someone and being like, will you be my friend? It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
It's fully the worst part of me. I'm like, I could never date again because I am a creep, and I don't know how to do that with friends either.
Well, and if you're like, you're opening up yourself to like vulnerability, like, I need more friends. Do you want to join and let's be friends, please, together?
You're like, oh, if they say no, it's just
cool.
Based on your personality.
Yeah.
So.
I guess. Thank you. Bye. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for trying to put up with me. Yeah.
But yeah, it was great. I really love that. And I think, I really hope that they keep doing this type of midnight release parties, because it was a lot. It was a really fun time.
I want that to come back, especially for adults. And I think that is the beauty of book talk, right?
Yes.
Like in some way, like having it be cool on social media makes it cooler in life.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that, but it's true.
It is.
And I feel like it makes it more popular. And I want authors, I want to like encourage that again.
One of the positive sides of social media. We don't say that a lot. Like we always talk about the negatives of it, but that was a good side of it.
Yeah. What are you reading right now?
So I am reading two books. Well, not two books at the same time. I mean, I'm doing an audiobook right now, and then I have, like, my night book that I read, like, chapter by chapter.
Audiobooks count as reading, though.
I think so, too,
here.
Right?
It all counts, yes.
Yeah, and I kind of like to listen to things, like, when I'm driving to work, so I either, like, do, like, an audiobook or I do a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, I'm just doing the audiobook. So the audiobook is Atomic Habits by James Clear.
Okay.
It's really nice. It's just about kind of as we started doing the podcast, right, I'm prepping for it. I wanted to get like a little bit more organized with my time. How do I make this a habit? So mm-hmm. he talks about like the little changes and things that you can do to kind of bring like permanent change into your life. A little quick snippet just for anybody that's listening to this. One of the cool things that like he kind of recommends is like not aspiring to be something, but just kind of calling yourself that what you want to be. So instead of like, I want to be a runner, you want to say, I'm a runner. And then just kind of like changing that like perspective on like your words just kind of helps kind of change a little bit of your, you know, habits in real life.
So we are wildly famous podcasters. Mm-hmm. A book brand.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay.
I think
that's just true.
We're just podcasters.
There's really no. Well, we are podcasting, so we are podcasters.
I guess we are. Yes. Yeah, good call.
We're going to put that habit into motion.
Yeah.
It is interesting, though, because you mentioned that you were listening to that on audiobook. Mm-hmm. I find myself doing the same thing. Like, I think one of the things that we both agree on is, like, we really like to vary our books between, like, what would be considered a little bit more culturally highbrow to the absolute dregs. And I think there's a place for both. I think it's important to have both. But it's hard sometimes, like when you get out of the habit.
Yes.
Like I'm not going to go into Infinite Jest without a little prep.
Yes.
It's hard to like get yourself in the habit. And sometimes like an audiobook is a really good way to do that.
Yeah, especially when you get like in a reading, you know.
Yeah.
Like you just like cannot, you don't know what to read. Like you just kind of like over it. Just the audiobook just kind of gets you back into it. It's really nice.
And I also think like people crap on, you know, the romance, the fantasy, as if it's not as legitimate.
Yeah, you read what you want.
What
brings you comfort. It's for your fun and enjoyment. It shouldn't feel like it's homework.
And it's like about building your, it's about building like a world in your brain, taking a break. I think that's one of our big tenets in our reading habits is that everything counts. Everything is good.
Agreed. Yeah, it is. If you look at my Kindle history, it is like a ridiculous, if you look at like the cover pictures of them, it is a from like, you know, Victorian romance to like, I don't know, 100 Years of Solitude. Like, it's like a whole vast array of things in there.
It's like picking a wine where you're like, I'm going to choose by the label if I don't know what I'm doing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I like it.
You went to an author panel recently too, right?
I did. Yeah. Yes. Romance. Ladies that are amazing. Mm-hmm. So it was hosted by one of our local bookstores here in Austin. Was actually in Georgetown. Shout out to Lark and Owl.
The best bookstore.
Love it.
Best recommendations. They're amazing.
Super cute. Mm-hmm. Really amazing stuff.
Yep.
So they've actually gotten really into like hosting like author events or like little events in their store. Again,
They're getting the clue that we want desperately
community.
To talk together about something.
Exactly.
Without the work of having to make up a topic. Yeah.
Yeah. So like every week they're like hosting little events. And like the last one was with three authors, Catherine Center, Julia London, and Ali Hazelwood.
Had you read any of their books before you went?
Ali Hazelwood was the one that I had read. And it's like another person that is really into STEM romance, which is weird.
Oh, okay.
But Ali Hazelwood actually has like a PhD in like some sort of like super smart neurobiology, something like
that. That's amazing. See, this is exactly what I mean. People want to say that romance is a silly genre. It's like some of the smartest people in the world are writing those books, enjoying those books. Mm-hmm. Like,
exactly. Mm-hmm. So like super smart. She was actually like a professor. I don't think she mentioned which university she was teaching at. Mm. And like the way that she got discovered, she was writing fan fiction for Star Wars. So like that's how she was online. And like she had like a really big following. And I think one of these book publishers reached out to her and she's like, hey, would you be interested in wanting to do some books? And she's sure, that sounds super fun. And now she's in this contract where she's having to put out like 2 books a year. And her niche is like all around STEM romance.
Very cool.
So Love Hypothesis, Love Theory, I think is the other one that she's written. Like I think recently she just released Bride, things like that. Really fun, easy read. Something that you would just kind of take to the beach and just kind of like read in a sitting.
Mm-hmm.
Super fun. Catherine Center and Julia London, I hadn't read their books yet. I do know probably that from Catherine Center, people might know her because a couple of her books have been turned into movies. So one of the, there's a movie actually on Netflix with Ellie Kemper, Happy Beginnings, I think it's called, or Happy Endings. What was it? Let me find out. Happiness for Beginners.
Happiness for Beginners,
yeah. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but it is actually based on one of her books. So She has like, she has like some other ones too out there. But
that's funny. I've seen that movie. Again, I'm not the romance guru of our duo. Which
I don't know if I am, but
I think you know a lot. But like, I've seen that movie. It's a great movie, and now I know. Like, now it's I have to go back and read the book. Yeah,
yeah, it was super great.
And watch Happy Endings, which is also a great show. Yeah. But
separate thing. That's kind of what I was thinking. I have to look it up. I'm like, what was the name of the book? But yeah, it was really good. So, like, super popular, but like now I bought like a couple of her books. She has a new one being released in June called Rom-Comers that is about these two people that are like writers of like scripts where they just go to like pilot season and start writing things. And, you know, I guess it's like these two people are being forced to write together and it's like enemies to lovers, one of my favorite tropes.
The best trope.
Amazing. So that should be releasing in July, which is kind of awesome.
So it was just like an interview format with each of the authors about their process or?
Exactly. We got to learn a little bit about them. Like, how do they write, you know, how long does it take them? Is it pretty easy for them? What do they do to kind of get into the writing method? Mm-hmm. All those type of things. And they're all very, very different. It's kind of funny hearing them because you ask them like, do you feel like you're a good writer? And when you ask all of them, they were like, no, but maybe I should feel like I'm a good writer because I wrote like a ton of books.
I mean, they finished.
Yeah, they finished. That
is the hardest part about, I mean, we know from even setting this up, right? The hardest part is executing and not just thinking of endless ideas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was kind of nice just kind of hearing them like Ali Hazelwood. That's not her real name, by the way. It's her pen name. Mm. So that's probably great pen smart. Name,
yeah, yeah,
really, really good. She's actually Italian too, which is adorable. Oh. And then she was... like, she was kind of explaining her method and how obsessed she is with Taylor Swift and how she kind of listens to different albums to kind of get her in her mind.
Writers love Taylor Swift. Rebecca Yarros loves Taylor Swift.
Yes.
I mean, we're both Swifties, but it's amazing how she has such an impact on, like, the creative part of the brain. Yeah, she transcends,
Transcends time and brain activities. It's amazing. But, yeah, it was super great. They're super witty, of course, which I would expect for a pretty awesome writer. Super witty, really funny. We laughed so much. There were 250 people in attendance. I forgot to say that, which seems kind of a lot for like a writer panel.
It was in the middle of the week too.
Yeah, it was like a Monday night.
In a suburb.
Yeah.
In an Austin suburb.
30 minutes away.
I mean, yeah, 45 minutes
from the city center. Yes, 45 minutes.
Let's give it its due distance. But yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, it was super nice and kind of like a great activity. Like there were so many people. Everybody was just kind of talking about all the romance books and like getting really into it, which was great. And I would want to do it again. It was so fun just kind of getting to hang out with fellow romance readers and get to know these amazing writers.
And a way to like get people who necessarily aren't into romance. Like, I'll be honest, for a long time, I was one of those people that's like,
look down on us.
I don't know how I feel about this genre. If I can relate to it, but like exactly like you said, like now that more people are given opportunities to write books from their perspective or from like their experience, you get like a wider array of stories in the romance, right? Like you get your STEM stories, you get people who, you know, are doing like more traditional, like, you know, a woman runs into a prince on the street and falls in love, which is again,
sometimes
like,
you need that.
It has its place, but I think it like really helps people like me who like wouldn't come to the genre naturally, like really get some version of it that works for them and like draws them in. And that is all to say that we need more writers.
More variety.
More opportunities, in genres that have been overlooked.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, it was kind of funny, like one of the writers, Julia London, she was talking like the book that she's writing right now. It's about two people that are in their 50s. And she was like, it's kind of funny, but there's really no a lot of romance novels or people that are kind of a little bit more mature.
Yes.
So she's like struggling, like trying to figure out how to put together this story about these people in their 50s. And she writes a couple of like very steamy scenes in the books. So she's just like, I don't even know how to describe two people in their 50s having sex. And I'm like, well, that's kind of an interesting topic. But like her book publisher, they're like, there is like a really big open space because not a lot of people write romance for older for an older generation.
And exactly
not,
like I said,
not that I'm saying 50s is old, I'm saying older.
Well, no, but you're right, like people want I think we don't think about it. We think they just like somebody sets them on an ice floe and pushes them out into the ocean and that's like the end of your life once you turn 45. And like that's just not true. You have the Golden Bachelor, you have other versions of these romances that people are super invested in because it's annoying to see like attractive 30-year-olds fall in love on the 100th iteration, mm-hmm. right? It's like, yeah, it's life is a lot easier when you're 22. Your complications are fewer.
Exactly. And, you know, it's kind of funny because, like, we were talking about Ali Hazelwood, and she wrote a book recently called Checkmate. Super adorable. It's about this, like, chess prodigies, you know, they kind of play together. Mm-hmm. But they were like 17 and 20 or something like that. So it was a little bit harder for me to relate to that. It was still like a nice, easy read.
Right.
But I didn't feel like I connected to it as much because I'm like, oh, these are babies. These are kids. Like, I can't really take it too seriously.
Right.
Even though it was a fun read, it's not like something that I would naturally connect to.
So, no.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's a place for that, right? Yeah. It's fun to have a coming of age novel. But yeah, I want people in the nursing home pushing themselves to a dining room together in a wheelchair.
Love it.
And falling in love. I want that story.
Yes.
Maybe that's what we'll work on together.
That'll be your book debut. The Golden Years or something.
Yes.
But, and you know, before we started talking about the author panel, you asked me a question of what I was reading.
Yeah.
But I didn't get to ask you what you're currently reading.
Oh, man. So I go back and forth between mm-hmm. formats as well, between an audiobook, a Kindle, and a physical book. And I have to be in, like, the right mindset. So, like, I typically go for a specific setup format for specific genres. And I'm reading The School for Good Mothers right now.
Oh, I've heard about this
one. It was one of Obama's best books of 2023. And because it's more cultured, mm-hmm. I like to take notes in books. I'm like a true literary kid. And because mm-hmm. I don't know, I have to like write my thoughts down. And it's a pretty heady book about a woman who basically loses rights to her child because she has what is presumed to be like a mental break, right? She's a mm-hmm. tired mother who leaves her child at home for a short period of time.
Okay.
And she basically like enters in this big brother state to sort of like win her child back. It is so depressing.
Sounds so really depressing. Sad.
And I am not a mother.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally find like it is my horror to mm-hmm. hear about new mothers' experiences. That is my horror genre because mm-hmm. it seems so hard, so unsupported. Again, like when we were talking about
unappreciate it too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
like
it's
this,
not great.
It's not my perspective. It's a very interesting perspective mm-hmm. on it. So it's funny though, like that's what I mean by you need the high and the low, because I am loving this book. It is so good. It is so well written. I do not want to read another one of these books when I'm finished it. I think we're going to read Kilt Trip, right?
Yeah.
Give me like a nice bubbly romance because I cannot be mired down in the realities of like day-to-day difficulties. I need a palate cleanser.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. It's like you need like a brain palate cleanser. That's what you need afterwards. Yeah, variety is the key of it.
Right.
Yeah. Kilt Trip is going to be the next round of pick for a book club, mm-hmm. the little one that we were mentioning earlier.
Yeah.
So we're kind of excited about it.
I'm excited about it too.
Little Scottish romance. You mean, I'm guessing it's Scottish romance. I mean, there's a kilt in the name of it.
We'll probably do a follow-up on this on our next podcast.
Yeah, the next one or the two after. We'll see when we're going to do our book club session. We try to do it once a month, but our scheduling kind of keeps holding on because there's a lot of people that we need to coordinate with. But
yeah, this is the realities of adulthood is that you...
We put it on our calendar. We'll meet 3 months from now on this date.
17 years from now, we'll talk about this book that came out.
Do you happen, like... I've read a couple, and I've seen a couple of things on social media about people like reading so much that then they'll immediately forget what they just read. Have mm-hmm. you had, maybe that's why you take notes on your books, because that way you kind of retain the information pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, one, things fly out of my head if I don't write them down immediately. That's just the kind of type A personality that I have. But I also, like, I personally don't love this movement of I've read 1,700 books this
year. It's insane, right?
I think it's sort of like, you know, on the topic of like books as community, it's like that's so self-isolating. If you're spending so much time by yourself and not engaging mm-hmm. on the right, the whole like fun of the book is that you get to like
discuss it with other people,
like mm-hmm. really think about like what it made you think about, how you're connecting it to what's happening around you or mm-hmm. happening to someone else. Like, its ability to like, you know, make you a more empathetic person,
exactly.
So, but if you're reading, you know, 4 books a day. It's like, what can you really be thinking about?
I mean, listen, if you're doing that, anyone that's listening to this, more power to you. It's just, I think maybe for us, that's a little too much.
I want someone in our DMs telling me what they're getting out of this. I want to know, like, tell me what mm-hmm. it is that how you're doing this, first of all, because I physically don't know how enough hours in the
day. Kind of impressed, honestly. It's like, okay, how do you guys do that? I don't know. I'm also to that age that my eyes get tired if I'm reading too long. Might have to start looking into some readers or something.
Or we need to like hire an intern to read at us.
Yes.
Or I guess that's...
That's when we know we actually made it. Have an intern that's just reading.
It's not an audiobook. It's just... somebody that we've paid to read with voices in the exact tone that we want.
Oh, that would be great. Mm-hmm. That would be amazing. They can just like do the voices, be loud, be gentle.
Yes.
It's great. That would be amazing, actually.
But I do, yeah, I want to understand how people are doing that. I do love that people are reading.
I love it.
In a weird way, it's like, okay, well, even though I think that's crazy, I also think it's making books cool again. We love this. Yeah,
there's like a little bit, I mean, I don't know if it's just me, but it does seem like there's a little bit of a renaissance of people wanting to read more books.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool and so amazing. Yeah. I don't know. Another benefit of social media, people are wanting to read more.
I think different kinds of books too, right? Like, and not to talk about everyone else's podcast, but like I listen to this podcast called Glamorous Trash where they talk about celebrity memoirs.
Ooh,
and
okay.
Like I remember listening to the first one. It was about Jessica Simpson. And I was like, I don't care at all about Jessica Simpson. She was around. She was a pop star when I was young. And I was just like, this is like a very vapid human being. And it like really turned me around on her. I don't read a lot of celebrity memoirs for the reasons that I said I hate earlier, which is like I was being judgmental. And like it really contextualized things like prejudices from my childhood where I was like, I had it wrong about this person. I would have never read that book had it not been for someone telling me like, look, take a second look at this, right? Yeah. I think that's kind of amazing.
And I think hers was like, I didn't read her book, but I know there was a couple of inserts that kind of went out, you know, that were kind of rolling around the internet where she was talking about that image where she was singing in Good Morning America or something. And people were calling her like fat, and she was like weighed 120 pounds,
right?
Like a tiny human, but it was just people calling it out, and it's kind of like part of like we grew up from the 90s, early 2000s, and we were just in this mindset that we need to be super, super, super skinny,
right?
And like that just kind of fell on her too. It was pretty relatable, honestly.
I remember the time being like, ugh, she is so fat. And I look like her, so I am also fat. It's like a hard...
It's so
like
heartbreaking. Or young selves, man. The trauma.
But again, like all the more reason, like give me more books about characters who...
Are real. Real people.
Give me a character who's in their 70s. Mm-hmm. Give me a character who is overweight, but whose being overweight is not the primary
It's just normal.
Part of the book. It's just like they just exist in the world. I think we're seeing that in television a lot more right now.
Bridgerton, season 3 coming soon.
Bridgerton.
Poland.
We saw it in shows like Parks and Rec, shows like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, where you like people want, or like Schitt's Creek or something like that, right? Where it's like, it doesn't have to be a topic of conversation. We're just like moving on about our day in like a real world scenario. And maybe this is just my blindness. I don't see that yet in books. I do see sort of...
She was beautiful, but she didn't know it.
Yes, exactly.
She was sexy, but she wasn't trying to be.
And I think, like, Rebecca Yarros starts there, right? Where she talks about somebody who has, an illness. And I think it's, like, people responded to that. They want an imperfect character. Now, she's still very hot in
but
traditional
really weak,
standards.
But can fight with dragons.
Right. I think there's, like, some opportunities to evolve that idea, but I like that she's
trying
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe like that's a good like segue for us to talk a little bit about some book news going on.
Yes.
I love that. So Rebecca Yarros, as we know, her favorite writer right now for Fourth Wing and Iron Flame. So she just announced last week on Good Morning America that Onyx Storm, book 3 of the Empyrean series, is coming out
January.
Yeah, 2025.
We're excited for the midnight release that we will absolutely go to and make more friends at.
Yep. Yes. Come join us. We'll be there.
We'll continue to scoop up human beings. Yeah,
it'll be great.
To be our friends.
Yeah. Do you have any theories? Are you excited about it?
Okay. I am excited about it. I know we had mixed reviews even in our book club.
Yes.
People who liked it and didn't like it. And I think, again, like I get swept up in the world. It's good world building. I don't literally care at all what's happening. If it's a good world where I'm just like, well, I don't have to like everyone. I think this is beautiful. So I cannot wait.
Well, and a lot of the characters are really young, right? So they could get obnoxious
at some point. It's like tough.
Yeah. Because if I think of myself when I was 18, I was pretty annoying.
You're the worst. Teenage girls are the worst. And so that note, like I do hope it's a different POV.
I do too. I mean, there's like this wild theory online where like she changed her profile picture on Instagram to black and white. Mm. So the theory is that it's going to be like a Venom point of view, because, you know, they suck the life out of everything, which kind of turns into gray and like black and white. So that maybe that's, they're thinking about maybe there's going to be a lot of venom.
I'm excited.
Yeah, so who knows? We'll see. I'm excited. I'm hoping that at some point we get some dragon's point of view. We want to know more about that in the world.
That's sort of what I'm looking for. Give me, give me a turn. Give me a,
yes.
You know, I
don't know. Kind of want to see that. That'll be great.
I think it'll be exciting. And I'm already pre-ordering the book because I, like every psycho in the world, want the sprayed edges. The
special edition.
What is going on? I've never cared in my life about owning a series of physical books as much as I care about this series.
The Fourth Wing on Iron Flame, I own way too many copies.
I know.
Ugh, yes.
I don't need 17 editions, but I do.
But we do.
But yeah. And also, like, I think it's so smart because, again, like, pre-orders mean everything, right?
Yes.
For publishers getting books out. And I think this is, like, such a smart way to get people to go back to bookstores, which all of you should be doing if you're listening to this. Go to a bookstore, buy a physical book.
Local one if you can.
Do it so that you look cool and have it on your shelf when people come over. You can still listen to your podcasts and still listen to your audiobooks, but, like, go and buy it. It's
and, better. You know, just a little tip here for anyone out there. If you actually pre-order it with some of your local bookstores, some of the authors will send pre-signed copies to your bookstores.
That's right. That happened to you,
That happened to me. It was one of – I went and picked up three books. And they gave me one that was signed by Rebecca herself. So totally, I know Lindsay's still kind of mad about it.
I'm still jealous.
I called dibs on it immediately.
But you did go and pick up my book, so I really can't say anything.
But it's kind of an amazing experience. I have a lot of copies signed by Ali Hazelwood as well, because I go to my local bookstore and I pre-order. So it's kind of a fun experience to get that.
I know. I really want people to continue this trend of, like, pre-ordering physical books. Plus, like, I don't know. I mean, neither of us are dating, but I do feel like it's a good sign when you walk into someone's house, they have a bunch of books, and you can see, like, where their interests lie.
Exactly.
Like, no offense, but if you're walking into someone's house and they have, like, 50 Chuck Palahniuk books or something, you got to run.
What books?
Do you remember him? He made Fight Club and, like...
Yes!
There was, like, a time in the late 90s where, like, every high school guy I ever dated was, like, super in him. And they're, like, highly violent and, like, you just, like, run. That's what I'm saying. And I am making a judgment on anyone listening to this podcast that it's obsessed with him as a writer.
No. Good to know. Good to know.
But that's just me being judgmental. Yeah. But, like, I do think it's, like, it's there's something, like, pleasant about holding it in your hands and, like, working through it. And
it's kind of a nice experience. I kind of started doing this thing where, like, sometimes if I was reading them on my Kindle or kind of getting them from Libby through my public libraries, then I would make sure to go and buy. If I liked it, I would try to go and buy the physical copy too.
Right.
It's kind of like a nice little, you know, memory of, like, you reading it and kind of enjoying those emotions.
Exactly right.
It's kind of cool.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. What else? Yeah. What else is up in book news?
Book news. So I guess the other thing, Rebel Wilson. I know we just kind of mentioned that we're not really into celebrity memoirs.
Oh,
but
no, I am into them now.
Okay, you are into it?
I wasn't, but now I'm like, give me every detail. I want to know everything about your life.
Good
juice. Deeply care. Yeah. And... yeah, I think it like really shows you how terrible it can be.
It is.
To be in some of these industries that we...
yeah, it's kind of a crazy story. Like, I mean, I'm sure a lot of you guys have heard about, like, you know, she was calling out, doing a couple of, like, headlines about, like, she's calling out a massive actor because he was being, like, a total douchebag and being inappropriately... acting inappropriately towards herself when she was really young in the industry.
This was, like, in 2017.
So, yeah, like,
forever
fairly
ago.
New.
Right.
Yeah. So it was kind of crazy. And I guess he called out that, I guess, this actor that was going to get called out, they were getting lawyers trying to stop the printing of the book.
Oh, because when she... yeah, so I think, like, she had sort of posted on Twitter, I think... or somewhere online in 2017 alluding to this. And then it came up again when they were publishing her memoir, to your point, because they do a legal check to make sure that she's not going to get sued. Yeah.
So I think they were trying to kind of, this actor, which we now know is Sacha Baron Cohen, was the person that was getting called out, and he was trying to stop the memoir from moving forward, which was not successful. So now it's a whole celebrity drama going on.
I have, like, it makes me so mad to hear about it. It's like, can no one be just kind and good? It's really frustrating. But I also, something that I truly loved is that she called them out by name.
It, more power to her. Love that.
I loved you.
Don't allude. Tell me.
And I know, like, for legal reasons, I just love that she was like, I don't care. I'm going to say this. I think there's, like, it's so much power to, like, name the people. And I read Page Boy, Elliot Page's.
Oh, I haven't read that one yet.
It's amazing. But there are kind of a lot of similar stories. And it's annoying when you don't know who they're referring to. Because
you have to guess.
I just feel like it allows the behavior to continue. You know?
Yes. Yeah. You're kind of excusing it and covering it a little bit.
So like Rebel Wilson, major props for her. Just really not caring at all. I'm using her millions to put herself legally on the line.
Love that. You know, like she was also kind of trending because there was another part of her in her memoir where she's discussing that she actually lost her virginity in her mid-30s. Did you hear about that?
No, I did not.
Yeah, and like she was kind of trying to normalize that like people grow at, you know, at different rates and like it should be okay to do whatever you want at whatever age you want to.
Fascinating.
So it's kind of a cool thing and I'm actually looking forward to reading more on her memoir about this.
Right. And I think she's like really put herself into the ether a bit more in a totally different way as like a more serious, again, like this is the power of books. This is the power of memoirs. Like you're totally thinking about a person that you might have written off as just like a silly pitch perfect actress and moved on about your day. Now it's like, I want to know everything about her experience. Yeah.
And it's funny because like she played out very like overly forward, like sexually forward characters sometimes and to kind of get this perspective from
her
that she's kind of like,
think about that.
She hadn't experienced it, but she's acting that way. And it was pretty kind of an interesting concept. So I'll be curious to kind of get to hear a little bit more of her thoughts on that.
And maybe we add that to our book club list. We'll come back.
Actually, I like that. Yeah, that would be kind of nice.
Follow-ups on these books that we
bring
up.
Like a note. Guilt trip, Rebel Wilson's memoir.
We're going to keep ourselves
accountable
on the hook here by giving you our TBR so that everyone listening can yell at us when we don't provide any updates or recommendations at all.
Yeah, please yell at us in the DMs. and then I guess maybe like the last story that we kind of maybe want to bring up is a very controversial one coming from Harvard University, whatever. Obviously I did not go to an Ivy League school. Go UT. The other one is like apparently there was this human skin bound book that the university had, and they're actually going to be removing it because they, I guess, found out that they used the skin of the dead person without consent. So they found like some additional things and it's kind of a crazy thing because it wasn't even that old. I think it was something that was written and done in like the late 1800s, early 1900s. Mm. I don't know if you read about this story.
I did read about it.
Yeah. And I think you actually studied this in school, didn't you? Or you read about this?
So I had a friend that read, this is like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon here, but I had a friend that read an entire book about this and that basically about like, is this like ethical?
It's not. per my opinion.
I think it's so weird because it's like if they had consent, then would it be ethical? But also like who is looking for this? Here's my big question. How did they not know it was skin?
Are they saying that they didn't know it was skin?
Well, I mean, they've had it in their collection forever. And they're like, and then in the news article that I read, they were like, oh, we're rebinding it in non-skin. I have so many questions. I have so many questions about the execution of this.
I'm kind of curious, morbidly curious, what like human skin.
What does it feel like? What does
it feel like?
Yeah,
like that's so weird.
I want to know too. And it was a doctor that found the book initially.
It was a doctor. Yeah.
So you're like, it's okay when you're doing like surgery, but it's like not okay to bind books. And it's a very, it's a gray area.
It's weird. And like, I think I was reading a quote about the doctor saying like, if the book is about this, you know, about the human soul, why shouldn't it be bound with the human skin? And I'm like, huh.
Isn't
weird.
The whole thing of the soul that it's like kind of separate from the body though?
Yeah,
like,
you know what? That's fair.
Tell me more about that logic, my guy. Yeah. I don't know that that makes sense.
We'll see you in our afterlife and ask you all these questions.
I must know because like, I think you were just a creep and you were trying to like make yourself not a creep by...
Be part of history or something. Mm-hmm. Like I did this. I don't know. I feel like it was just for like personal egotistical reasons that they probably did it.
And I think it was a female...
Was it a female?
Yeah.
Oh, no, the human skin was female.
The human skin was female, yes.
I was like, no, the doctor is a dude, of course.
And of course skin was from
him. Oh, my God. It's kind of crazy, like, using, like, human anatomy to do things. Like, that kind of reminded me of a story that I studied when I was in school of this nun from the 1600s in Mexico that wrote a whole manuscript in her own blood. And actually, the University of Texas has it here.
What?
And it's, like, in display. Well, they don't have it in display all the time, but they'll bring it out because it's from the 1600s. But she's kind of very famous. You know, her name is Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz. And she was like a one of the earliest feminist writers known out there. And, like, she has written things about, like, foolish men in the 1600s, wow. which is kind of like a badass thing.
Probably why she had to be a nun.
Yeah, that's yeah. why she was a nun. Yeah. You know, she came from, like...
Couldn't be bothered.
Exactly. Yeah. So she was. It was kind of cool, but, like, she wrote it in her own blood, and it's not that one in particular, but some manuscripts, and some universities have it, as I know. It's kind of crazy.
That
and
is...
people are okay with it.
I just realized now, too, I had a, like, very stupid thought when you brought that up, which is... I imagine that she was writing with the blood, like, coming out of her finger, like she was finger painting. And I was like, who could read that? Like, she must have really built up her calligraphy skills. But obviously, that's insane. And what she did was...
No, hey, no, I think
like, she pour it out it. And then did it like a quill.
But how long would that take you to feel like a little vial of it? You're just, like, pushing your finger?
Really, like, the execution... I must kinda know curious. How she did it. Because in my mind, she is, like, using her fingernail like a pen... And just finger painting an entire book. And I'm like, that must have been some very large lettering.
No, I saw a picture of it because I haven't seen it in person, but I saw a picture of it and the calligraphy was gorgeous, as you would expect from a 1600s. The picture is in black and white, so I didn't see if it was red. But I'm guessing it's blood dries.
Yeah, it'll dry. But so many questions. Like, why the blood? Why?
I don't know.
She ran out of ink?
She was at the convent and she was like, we're poor.
We have to live an aesthetic lifestyle. We can't afford ink, so I will use
the blood.
That's fascinating.
I'll do what I can
This
use.
Got really dark.
Yeah, it did. Human skin and blood.
I wish we had more news. We'll have to like start ending on lighter news stories for next time.
No, palate cleanser. We need to do that.
Okay. So that is all that we have for our inaugural episode Super of exciting. Literally the podcast.
Can't believe we actually did it.
I know.
It's a lot of prep,
but we definitely want suggestions for ideas. Yes. You can find us at @_literallypod. Mm-hmm. I am @_literallylindsay with an A.
And I am _literallymagda, MAGDA.
Yeah. So reach out to us. Yeah. Tell us what you want to hear. I think next time we're going to talk about...
tips and tricks of like when you get in a reading slump, maybe some Livy app hacks if you don't know about them. So we'll give you the whole download on it.
All the book hacks cool. that we have.
So we'll be sharing that. Maybe we can kind of give an update on some of the books that we've read and just finished too.
I think it's a great idea. Yeah. More recommendations, more news, more fun.
So again, thank you for listening to Literally Books, the podcast.
Where we say what we read.
And we meet when we say.
Thanks everyone.
Bye. It's just two sentences. I can say this.
Okay.
Okay, just I guess.
We're gonna finish
it. Gotta finish it. Did you turn on the Roomba?
It really went
down. Wow.
The green button. There you go.
The Roomba.
The Roomba went off.